This is Ask Me Another from NPR. I'm Ophira Eisenberg. This week, we revisit an episode of Ask Me Another recorded in September of 2018 with Black Lives Matter activist and podcast host DeRay McKesson. And yes, this is a lighthearted interview in the context of a comedy trivia show. We joke about the blue Patagonia vest he always wears. We play a game about X-Men. But we also talk about the protests that followed the killing of Michael Brown in Ferguson in 2014, collective change, and finding hope when there is none. On DeRay's podcast, Pod Save the People, he and his co-host continue to tackle these important issues that we talked about.
This is Ask Me Another, NPR's Hour of Puzzles, Word Games, and Trivia. I'm Jonathan Colton. Now here's your host, Ophira Eisenberg.
Thanks, Jonathan. It's time to welcome our special guest. He's an activist who hosts the Crooked Media podcast, Pod Save the People. His new book is called On the Other Side of Freedom, The Case for Hope. Give it up for DeRay McKesson.
Hey, everybody.
Welcome.
Hey, it's good to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming. I know you grew up in Baltimore. Even in high school, you found a commitment to community service. You actually served as a chairperson on a committee where students were allowed to decide what projects were funded.
Yeah, so I was in student government my whole life.
Okay, wait a second. This was fun for you in high school?
Yeah, it was like, stop it, that was mean. Yeah. It was. She's like, how uncool were you?
No, I actually think that's super cool. I just didn't even know it was there.
Yeah, so like I was on this board when I was young, and it was 20 young people and 10 adults, and we gave away like $500,000 a year to youth-led community projects. So young people in their neighborhoods would be like, hey, like we want to do this project for like $2,000. It's one of the only youth grant-making organizations in the country, and I did it when I was like 14, 15, and 16.
Okay, so what were some of the proposals?
Oh, you know, it's funny looking back, I'm like, what were we doing? But they were like, you know, they wanted to like start a neighborhood library in this like, I don't know, buy toys to play with kids in the neighborhood. Like all these things that like young people were thinking. And we were like, you should do that. You know, or like they wanted to do tutoring or like start an after school program that young people ran, like those sort of things.
So in the summer of 2014, you are working in Minneapolis. You are part of the education system,
the school system
there.
Yeah.
You decide that you're going to go to Ferguson, Missouri, which is just outside of St. Louis, to get a firsthand account of the protests. It is a reaction to the killing of Michael Brown. You worked with Black Lives Matter, and this moment of activism is really how many people know you.
Yep.
Now, while you were there, you documented the enforcement of something called the five-second rule.
Yeah.
So what is that?
Yeah, so if you saw us marching on TV in 2014, it wasn't that we thought marching was cool. It was actually illegal to stand still in August, September, and October of 2014, that if we stood still for more than 5 seconds, we were arrested. So it's why we marched all day. And the police thought that they were going to enforce this rule, and then we were going to be so exhausted that we were going to go home. And instead, we were like, if we got to walk, you got to walk. So we just like marched all night long, all day. It was a whole thing, and we sued. It was declared unconstitutional. And I tweeted about it because one morning I was like standing on a corner on West Florissant, and these four officers come up to me and they're like, hey, you can't stand there. I was like, I just stood here yesterday. And they were like, you can't stand still. You can't pace this area and you can't like go and come back. And I was like, okay, that's wild. So I tweeted it. And that tweet was actually the first recorded instance of the 5 second rule in St. Louis. So like when I'm on the stand, literally the tweet comes up on the thing and the judge is like, what is a tweet? And I'm like, I don't know. You know,
they're
like,
wow.
Yeah. And then he's like, what is Twitter? I'm like, I mean, this, you know, it's like in the middle of the protest. So it was one of those things that I always think about because I never want to forget how fragile freedom is. That like it was illegal to stand still in 24. That's like a wild thing.
Right. You know, you're wearing this iconic blue puffer vest.
It's a good vest.
That it's a great vest. I'm sure you're very happy that it's fall. I don't know if you wore it through the heat.
It's always air conditioned inside.
That's true. Now, this has become an iconic look for you, but for those of the listeners that might be just discovering this for the first time, what does this vest mean to you that you are really into making sure you wear it?
I think about it like my tattoo, right? Is that like I never want to forget that what we went through was real. And like I've been wearing this particular vest since the protest began when it was cold. So like I've been tear gassed in this. I was dragged out of police department by my ankles in this. You know, like I was shot at with rubber bullets in this. And it just like keeps me grounded in the fact that like all of those things were real.
But I love that you're committed and you just didn't buy tan. And recycled them.
It is weird now. People give me them as gifts now, which is awkward.
Oh, right.
So they'll be like, thank you for coming. Vest. And you're like, I don't have like an affinity for vests. You know, it's like a vests are fine. You know, I like this vest. So I do have like, I don't even call them backup vests. I do have like a closet of vests now because people think it's adorable. Right, so they're like, here's a vest. And you're like.
Well, the vest has its own Twitter account.
It does, that I did not create.
Yeah, you
did. The vest does have a Twitter account.
You do not manage that account.
I did not create it. I did not manage it. It is funny, though, because sometimes the vest is like a little too snappy on Twitter. So I have to DM the person and be like, chill out, please. Like, stop biting. Because people think it's me, you know? And I'm like, I didn't do. They're like, you were so rude. I'm like, I didn't say that to you. Like, that was the vest.
You interact with your vest?
Sometimes, you know, and it, you know, this is completely random that I don't think I've talked about before, but I was the chief of human capital in the school system in Baltimore. So I managed like everything to do with adults in the school system, 200 schools, 80,000 kids, 11,000 staff members. The vest used to tweet during the workday. So I would get these like notes from the superintendent's office being like, Dre, please get off Twitter. And I'm like, I'm not on Twitter. It wasn't me. It's the vest. I don't run the vest account. So I'm having to like DM the guy. I'm like, please don't tweet during the workday. Cause like I'm getting complaints from people. It's like a whole thing.
So I want to talk about your book On the Other Side of Freedom, The Case for Hope. In it, you talk about being bullied as a kid. A lot of us can relate to that. And you also talk about your experiences. Your experience protesting actually gave you the ability to mentally confront the bully from your past. Can you just tell me how that works?
Yeah, so that essay was born. So the essay is called The Bully in the Pulpit, and I was sort of fascinated. Somebody asked me, would I meet with Trump? And I said to them, like, I don't know if it's my job to tell the bully to stop bullying me, right? Like, I don't know what that looks like, to go up to the bully and be like, hey, I'm a full human. It's like they know and they're doing it anyway. So that's where that essay sort of came from. But when I think about the idea of the case for hope, it was born in this notion that like when we say the system is broken and people say, oh no, it's working exactly like it was designed, the takeaway from that is that it was designed, right? People made this up.
Right.
And because people made it up, we can make something different. Like if they can rewrite the tax code and the back of paper towels and napkins and scrap paper, then like we can actually do all of this in a generation too, right? Don't tell me that this has to be two lifetimes.
Right. For people that feel very disillusioned right now and maybe don't have a lot of hope, mm-hmm. how do you inspire those people?
Yeah, I'm reminded that like we see the inspiration all around us. I'm one of many people who's in the street.
Sure.
And like when I think about all the people out there, like their inspiration for me, I'm interested in building the biggest choir possible. And anybody who's ever been in a church choir or near choir, you know that being in the choir is a whole lot of work, right? Like it's not a passive experience. And I know that there's so many people out there who are just waiting for an invitation to join the choir. They have a voice. They just don't believe that they can sing yet. And like what the best organizers do is say, like, you have a voice, like, come sing with me. Let's learn new music. Like, teach me new music. What the best teachers do is the best teachers walk into classrooms and say, you already had the gift, right? What I'm here to do is make you realize that you can access the gift long after I'm gone. What the worst teachers do is make people believe that the gift only exists in their presence.
Mm. You know, you said that the vest means something because the vest has been all through all this stuff. But that's obviously you have been through this stuff.
Yes.
But you have said that the hardest thing you have ever done is teach.
Teaching was hard.
I taught
sixth grade math, and 11-year-olds are no joke. And, you know, it's funny because parents are like, oh, yeah, 11-year-olds. But it's like, you didn't teach your kid and all their friends. You know, that's like a much harder than like your one kid. You know, it's like, so like the burping contest, you're like, oh, my God. So I taught sixth grade math, which is great. Seventh grade is puberty and deodorant, and it is bad. Mm. Like, that's like a whole different thing. Like, the moment where kids like start having to wear deodorant and they don't know it, and you're like, hey, that smells like a little special. And they're like, what do you mean? And you're like, ew, you know.
Yeah, my sister was like, Axe body spray is horrible, but it's way better.
Yes. But they like have they don't know moderation, right? So it's like, everything is Axe. You're like, why is your hair smell like Axe? You're like, why your clothes smell like Axe? You're like, put Axe on before you even come near the building, right? Like, don't even put it in the building because it's so much.
Yeah.
Kids were great, though. Yeah, but it was hard.
Dere, are you ready for an Ask Me Another challenge?
Let me, yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, of course you are. So, Duray, in your book, you write about your childhood love of also the X-Men.
I love the
X-Men. So what was the appeal for you with
Storm.
The X-Men?
Storm.
Best character, by far, has not been cast well in any of these movies, which is really disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
Storm was such a pivotal part of the team. And in these movies, it's just like, you're like, what happened to Storm? I get Wolverine's appeal.
Yeah.
But like, Storm is really where the juice was.
Yeah, tell me more about that. What way?
She would like often arrive first, if you remember, like definitely the cartoons. And she would do like something simple, like, I mean, I guess like conjuring the clouds isn't simple, but she would do something simple for her. And then she would just like fall back and let the other X-Men come and like lead, right? It was such a great example of what it meant to be a leader, creating space for other people. And like, I just will never forget like seeing that every week and like seeing the restraint that she showed with such incredible power, like still sticks with me.
You have an amazing way of analyzing this stuff in a way that I've never thought of.
Yeah,
I love
hopefully
it.
Hopefully you learn too. You're like, yes, Storm.
It's good, yeah. Okay, so you're going to sail through this. We wrote a game just for you, inspired by your iconic blue vest and your love of the X-Men. Okay. So I'm going to describe an X-Men character's iconic look.
Uh-oh.
And you just tell me who I'm talking
Yikes.
About. And if you do well enough, listener Joseph Koch from Brooklyn, New York, is going to win and ask me another Rubik's Cube.
I'm with you, Joseph.
All
Here
right.
we go.
Here's your first one. A ruby quartz visor worn over both
Cyclops.
Eyes. Yes, Cyclops.
I mean, that was... Thank you. Visor sort of gave it away.
Yeah, visor. And,
thank you.
He wore it because he shot powerful energy out of his eyes and was the only way...
Are you reading that?
To
do,
protect
do you not
it.
Know that?
I'll be honest with you. I didn't read the comic books growing up.
You didn't
up.
Watch the...
I did watch the movies.
Yeah, but you didn't know Cyclops shot things out of his eyes in the movies?
Listen, I've got a lot of other things I need to learn.
Okay.
Okay. White hair and flowing cape.
Storm.
Yes. You can. Yes.
The best.
All right. Hair tufted on both sides into wings. Mutton chops. Gloves with holes where his adamantium... Claws come out of.
Wolverine, that
yeah,
was good.
Wolverine.
The adamantium sort of, I was like, what?
Hugh Jackman has appeared in 9 of the films as Wolverine. He's like
He's
the constant.
Great.
Yeah, Wolverine, Canadian. I'm Canadian. I have a little bit
Are you
of,
really?
Yeah, yeah.
Like legitimately Canadian.
Absolutely legitimately Canadian. Gloves to prevent direct skin-to-skin
Rogue.
Contact with other people. Yes, exactly. She absorbs other people's life force.
I know. It made love really hard for Rogue. It did.
Yeah. Blue fur and glasses.
Beast.
Beast, that's right.
I almost said Gambit. That was like a brain fart. I was like, ah! Beast.
This is your last clue. A bald head with a custom wheelchair or...
Professor X.
Yes, Woo! Professor X. Charles Xavier.
I was nervous you were going to do somebody like Jubilee, and it'd be like, what would be the the description of Jubilee? But you didn't. I appreciate
no,
that.
No, we went classic.
I
we went classic.
It. Thank you.
Turns out you basically got them all right.
Joseph!
Congratulations! That was Black Lives Matter activist Duray McKesson in an interview we taped with him in 2018. He's on Twitter at Duray, and his podcast is Pod Save the People. So now we're going to go back to some more trivia games recorded in front of a live audience. But before we do, I'd like to mention that NPR has some amazing coverage and conversation about what's going on right now. Check out the podcasts Code Switch, It's Been a Minute with Sam Sanders, and Throughline, and of course, NPR's daily news programs on the radio. And now, here's the rest of our game show.